Oh, hello. It's 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, July 5th. I'm Ray Graff. Oh, it's birds today. Birding. Our favorite bird experts are here. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart are in Studio A to answer your burning birding questions. If you have one, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Or email voxpop@wamc.org, and I'll tell you, panelists, a lot of people have already emailed. It is going to be a firecracker of a program. The number again is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, Julie Hart, and the birds coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds today. And when we do that, we talk to people who know about birds. And we're lucky we have a couple in the studio. Avian experts Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart join us today. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC. He's now the original reviewer for the premier birding site eBird. Julie Hart works for New York Natural Heritage and is the New York Breeding Bird Atlas Project Coordinator. She coordinates with thousands of volunteers to document bird breeding behaviors. She has a focus in bird conservation, not conversation, and citizen science. The number to call if you'd like to have a bird conversation is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or email us, voxpop@wamc.org. Julie Hart, welcome back. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great to have you back here in Studio A. Rich Guthrie, what's shaking?
Good afternoon.
All right. I'll take that as everything is fine. We have emails. We might as well get right to them, and then we'll get to your whatever events that you guys want to discuss, if any. We have a stack of emails here. It's quite amazing. This is from DJ. Came in a long time ago. So many of us birders have noticed that this spring sightings have been unusually low. Will it be possible to determine if this is due to the current outbreak of avian flu? And that's from DJ in the Hudson Valley.
DJ, no, not likely. Not avian flu. Other factors are involved, but avian flu is one of the more remote possibilities. And the reason for that is that the birds we're looking at, for the most part, the songbirds and their friends, are not really affected by the avian flu outbreak. It's a serious problem, but primarily confined or limited to the waterfowl and, you know, water birds, birds associated with water.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. It's, so.
But a chicken is not, right? And then, well, they've killed thousands or millions of chickens.
Chickens are affected. A lot of that is about the concentration of numbers in a small space. And and the same holds true for waterfowl. It's that when ducks and gulls gather in large numbers and together in tight spaces, and so that probably has some involving factors there. But for the songbirds, not so much. There are lots of other factors that are affecting the numbers of songbirds, and I will say, right off the top of my head, big on that list is a lack of insects. I mean, there's just food, it's all about food. They ain't got no food, then they're going to be hurting big time. Babies are not going to do well. Successive generations are going to show serious declines, and that's what's going on out there. So, yeah, I share your observation, but it's not that cause.
You know, I saw an item in the news today. Several dead seals up in Maine, and they have now isolated or confirmed that bird flu was a factor there.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. That's a serious leap.
That is a serious and terrifying leap.
Yes.
This is from, let's go off the ledge here. This is from Marty in Hadley. My question is about hummingbirds. We have a feeder in our garden, which is near our screened-in porch. Frequently, one of the hummingbirds will fly back and forth like a clock pendulum, squealing the whole time. What's it all about, Julie Hart?
That is their mating display. That's what they do to court the females. So that is a classic breeding behavior. That's something that we would be asking people to report to the Breeding Bird Atlas.
Okay, and by the way, how is the Breeding Bird Atlas going?
It's actually going really well. We have over 350,000 checklists, and we are just about at 3,000 Atlasers. So we have a lot of participation. We have 224 species that have been confirmed breeding in the state. And just in the last month, we've had 5 new species recorded breeding in the state. King Rail, Common Eider, Chuck Will's Widow, Philadelphia Vireo, and Mississippi Kite.
So those are great names. Chuck Who's Widow? What happened to Chuck?
Chuck Will's Widow.
Wow.
That's what he says. It's a mnemonic for what he says. Yeah.
Rich, would you care to imitate that for us?
Yeah, Chuck Will's Widow.
You know what? That's half-hearted at best. This is from Sherry in Saratoga. By the way, the number here is 800-348-2551. If you want to call in about the birds, or you can write us at voxpopwamc.org. Sherry writes, I saw a bird I've never seen before this morning. It had a reddish-brown back and a white breast. The red-brown color was what caught my eye. Seemed unusual. Then I saw its breast. The only bird that seems close after a Google search is a brown thrasher, but the breast of the bird I saw was whiter than that. What is it?
Good question. Julie?
Yeah, I'm not sure without size comparison. I mean, she didn't mention the tail being really long, which would be really a good key for a thrasher.
All right, so Sherry in Saratoga can write back with more details.
More details,
please.
Would be very helpful.
Or a picture, and if we get it in time, we'll do it. This is from Teresa in Chatham. Kayaking at Stockbridge Bowl last week, we saw a lone immature loon. Is this unusual or typical summer behavior? And that's from Teresa in Chatham.
Well, for the Stockbridge Bowl, I'm going to say that it was a passing immature bird, not up to breeding plumage, not where it belongs for breeding. I mean, Stockbridge Bowl is well within the breeding range of common loon in the Northeast.
Yeah.
However, I think that a bird in immature plumage is too large, too soon to be the young of this year. They're still tiny chick size. So this is a young bird, let's say a teenager, wandering around, checking out the neighborhood, and we'll probably move on.
Okay. All right. This is from Rich's neighbor, Captain Phil. You know Captain Phil?
I sure do. Hi, Phil.
And he's all right, so we can ask his question?
Go right ahead.
Because it's a little whimsical. Here we go. So great to hear my neighbor Rich Guthrie is returning. Well, here he is. As newbies to the town that Rich lives in, and we won't have to say it, we moved up from Long Island, and he's welcomed us to the area, helped us feel at home. What a fellow. My question for Richard is, the other day I noticed quite a few turkey vultures circling over my house as I puttered around in the driveway. I wasn't sure what they were looking for, but I realized vultures normally eat carrion and circle over dead or dying animals. I feel fine, but Rich, are they telling me something? I'm a big guy. I assume they'd be set for quite a few months. Or is it possible the local vampire council is trying to send me a message? Usually they send ravens, but maybe ravens were otherwise engaged. That's from your buddy, Captain Phil.
Okay, Phil. Just try to stay in motion. The vultures, what vultures do is they look out for one another, and not necessarily altruistically. They're just keeping an eye on their neighbors to see if they've kind of maybe scored on a raccoon out in the field that didn't quite make it across. And so that's what they're doing. They also gather where there's a favorable wind thermal. And so if they find a good lift wind tunnel, they'll take it.
Okay.
And so their friends will gather in behind them. So
Phil has generating his own thermals wherever he goes, basically.
I haven't listened to him lately, but perhaps.
You make your own inference there. This is from Bob, and we'll throw this one to you, Julie Hart, and then we'll take a break. I've been buying Niger Plus sunflower chips and Niger in my thistle feeder, and I see two woodpeckers feeding each other on the feeder. Is it a mother and baby, or do woodpeckers love sunflower chips?
Oh, are they feeding on the sunflower or on the Niger?
I have been buying Niger Plus, sunflower chips and Niger thistle in my thistle feeder, and I see two woodpeckers feeding each other on the feeder. Is it a mother and baby, or do woodpeckers just love sunflower chips?
I mean, I know that woodpeckers do love sunflower chips. I have downies, hairies, and red-belly woodpeckers at my sunflower chips. In terms of the Niger, I have seen downies try to eat out of the Niger, but they're not usually very successful at it. So I'm not quite sure exactly what his situation is, but they definitely love the sunflower tips.
And the young downy woodpeckers are probably out of the nest now. So it could be mom and pop taking care of one of the kids.
All right, let's take a break. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart are here. It's Birds Today. 800-348-2551 is the number. We hit the phones coming up. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 800-348-2551. Before we hit the phones with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie, this email from Jim. Can you tell me what kind of bird is making this call at night between 8 and 10? We can never see it. Now, I'm going to play it off my phone. It'll probably sound lousy, but here we go. God, it's a monkey.
Jungle sounds in Del Mar.
So what do you think?
It's not a bird.
No?
Nope. And it's a sound that often confuses birders, and myself included, but that's actually a frog.
Really?
A gray tree frog. And the name tree, emphasis there, because they like to sit up in the tree and do that little chirping sound right towards the evening, as the observer noted.
Don't frogs like to be in the water? Why would
they
be in a tree?
I mean, they have to go back to the water, but they live in trees and also quite commonly found around back porches and onto the screen. They wander away from water quite often, they make that lovely sound.
Now, if I had more time, I would have passed it over to Zach, who would have applied some processing and made it sound even better.
Oh, that did good.
But we do with it what we can do. Let's go to Joe in Westerlo. Joe, you're on.
Hi, how you doing, guys?
Yeah, pretty good. How are you?
So far, so good. I used to live, it's strange, I'm from Long Island, too, and I moved up to New Baltimore. I'm going to designate where Rich is from. Now we moved to Westerlo, up in the Helderbergs. And this red pine, planted probably back in the CCC or WPA, something, all over the place. I have ravens out in the red pines, and crows in my open area here. How do they get along?
They do and they don't. Depends on the day of the week. Ravens are big crows. They're actually very closely related. And in my opinion, they're a little more challenging. They're more exciting. Crows will tolerate them to a point. If the raven wanders into the crow's territory, all bets are off. And they don't get along well. But there are actually three kinds of crows in our area. The American crow, that familiar one with the ah sound. And then the raven has that ark, ark, ark. And then the fish crow sounds like either one of them from Boston. It goes ah. And basically, the fish crow and the American crow and the raven are cousins, but they're not exactly kissing cousins. They will,
they don't like each other that much.
Not that much.
So they're regular cousins.
Yeah, well, they'll tolerate each other as long as everybody is behaving. But go ahead.
And how do they tolerate humans? Humans.
It depends on the human. You know, there's some interesting stories out there about crows that take a liking to specific people, and actually will come to them and bring presents. And then there are people that crows just don't like.
Joe,
and I know you're Rich. I know you're Rich.
Exactly.
You like crows.
Exactly.
I know you
and
like
they,
crows.
And they love Rich.
And
they,
it's
they
mutual.
They
yes.
stand on his head and whatnot. Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Julie Hart, every time you're on the show and somebody makes a bird noise and I try to goad you into making bird noises, you don't do it.
I'm not very good at it.
No? Can we work on that for future shows? Rich, do a bird.
Tweet, tweet.
You know what?
No. It's easy.
The only thing I can do is a barred owl.
Oh, should
but
we?
Everyone can do a barred owl, so
really?
It's really
well, just,
not
what do you do?
Special.
Who?
Yeah, but I use my hands kind of
come
like
on,
a,
do it, Julie.
A trumpet
Let's hear it.
Thing to like make that ooh-ah at the end, right?
So
you've got to like Yeah.
See, now this
cup your mouth and then open your hands at the end.
This is what's going to get us that New York State Broadcasters Award that we finally, finally deserve. Wendy in Western Mass. Wendy, you're on.
Hi, I've got a bunch of questions, but my first one is about breeding of bluebirds. I've had two broods. So the second bunch is being fed now, but I'm wondering what happened to the first bunch. The parents moved from one bluebird house to another, but I don't know what happened to the first three bluebirds. Any thoughts? And then I wanted to know about catbirds and cowbirds in general.
Ooh, okay. Well, first part on breeding, Julie Hart, why don't you do that, and then we'll do the catbird question with Rich.
Yeah, did you happen to see the young birds from the first brood being fed by the parents?
Yep.
Okay.
Lovely. And the second brood is being fed in the house. They have not fledged yet.
Okay. Well, it's quite possible that they actually fledged and are independent now, and now the bluebirds are having a second brood. So it could be that those young birds just left the area to try to find food on their own.
Hmm.
That's one very possible answer, because the bluebirds arrive.
Could it be that the young birds are also feeding your new brothers and sisters?
Ooh, I don't think they have helpers, do they?
No, not really. Other birds do, but
some
not
birds
bluebirds.
Some birds do, but not bluebirds, yeah. And bluebirds do arrive really early in the year and start breeding really early, so it is very possible for them to be on the second brood already.
All right, and the second part was about catbirds, Wendy?
Yeah, just in general, information about catbirds and cowbirds. I've been spraying them so that they're not eating all my gourmet food. But I'd like to know a little bit more. I think the cowbirds eat the eggs.
No.
Or lay their eggs in the nests of other birds.
Yes.
But I just wanted more information.
And, well, the cowbird is a brood parasite. They do not make a nest of their own. They do not set up a territory and defend it as other birds might. And they do go find another bird, usually a smaller species, such as a warbler or vireo or flycatcher, and lay their egg there. And then they leave it up to the foster folks to bring up their young. And it's amazing. It's actually really an amazing adaptation. We don't have to like cowbirds, but you sure do have to admire them for their, that's kind of a sneaky trick that they get away with. And they're good at it.
All right. Wendy, thanks a lot for the call. It's Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart today. Birds on the program. We go to Mark in Schenectady. Mark, you're on.
Hi. I have a question. I have the I'm a backyard gardener, and I have the typical bluebird, cardinal, a robin in my backyard, and we have a berry patch, strawberry patch. And I know that, you know, birds will eat whatever berries around, and we have a soft covering mesh to cover them up, but unfortunately got to wait to the flowers turn into berries before I could really cover them up so the bees can do their thing. Is there anything I could do so I could have my strawberry patch actually produce strawberries?
Trying to tell a bird not to go near, it's like telling the neighbor kids to keep off the lawn. It's not going to happen. They're going to be drawn to the berries. That's what they look for. It's all about food. And I would say that you more or less have to stick to that cheesecloth or other covering over the berries and work at that. But one caution about that is check it often, because as careful as you may cover the berry bush, birds sometimes get into it and can't figure out how to get out of it. And you got to go over there and help them out. I mean, you may, you know, say, leave now and don't come back. Let's hope they pay attention.
I love all the, I love my birds in the backyard, and we have feeders and stuff. So it's a quandary, because I do both in the summer. I love my backyard, but I will do that in the morning when I go out there, make sure that there is no robin or cardinal stuck in my mesh.
Yeah, caught catbirds and waxwings and all the good berry eating birds.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. It's Birds Today with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. The number is 800-348-2551. In West Hurley, there is Marion. And Marion, you are now here. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I wanted to mention the last show you had. You're talking about chicks missing from nests, and you never mentioned cats, stray cats, wandering cats. Cats are the biggest killers of birds. And also I have the garden show. I mentioned mockingbirds and catbirds will eat the gypsy moths, or whatever you call them now.
Spongy moths.
Because they're fuzzy, and a lot of birds don't eat them. And then I also have the great crested flycatcher with the yellow belly and the red tail. And when hawks, the red-tailed hawks, are in distress around here being harassed by the crows or whatever, I do a whistle, and they think there's another hawk in the area, and they disperse. So...
Mm. Well,
that's the scoop.
Well, thanks for the information about the spongy moth. You're right about
spongy
that.
Moth, okay.
Some birds will go after them. Other ones will avoid the fuzzy caterpillar of the spongy moth. And it brings to mind that both of our species of cuckoo like that. That's kind of their
cuckoo,
specialty
yes.
food. And and it so happens that this year that I think there were greater numbers of cuckoos around.
Cuckoos?
Yes.
Yes. We have the two kinds, the yellow bill and the black bill. The yellow bill has a bill that is yellow.
Yeah.
And the black bill, I forget. but
I thought the cuckoo was extinct a long time ago.
No. No, they.
Oh, that's the dodo. I'm with
the
you
dodo.
Now. Yes. Okay. The cuckoo is still with us.
Yes. We have two kinds here.
Where I live by the Shokan Reservoir, and then across the road is like 350 acres of wildlife preserve, and so I get all kinds of birds.
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah. A lot of cuckoos down there. Thank you.
Just to bring to mind again that the roadrunner is a species of cuckoo.
No way.
Yeah. Unfortunately, not around here, but, you know, they're all kinfolk.
Rich Guthrie, Julie Hart, join us today. I always learn something on the bird shows, and then I always forget as soon as we're done. Let's go to Wine and Skill. Ellen, you're on.
Hi. There's this bird that I hear very often around here, and its call sounds exactly like Judy, 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 Judy.
Judy, Judy,
and there's a pause, and it's repeated, Judy, 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 Judy.
Huh. What do you think, Julie Hart?
Actually, it's one of two things. Most likely, it sounds like a northern cardinal. Other possibility would be a Carolina wren. They do a Julie, 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 Julie kind of thing. But the cardinal does what you imitated, plus then a couple of notes after that. I don't know, Rich, if you can imitate that.
Oh, you bet, Rich. Are you kidding me? It's a command performance with Rich Guthrie. Rich, make the sound.
Well, I'll try. I have to wet my whistle here.
Right. Stand by, Ellen, for radio greatness.
Yeah, see, my whistle is dry, so it ain't going to happen right now. That kind of like a cardinal. Yeah.
It's not as distinct as that. It really, really sounds like the same Judy. Like you might say, Judy Garland, Judy, 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 Judy. Judy, Judy.
Yeah, and I'm going to go along with the Carolina wren and also suggest tufted titmouse. Perhaps it's also saying Peter, 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 which is the way I learned it.
No. Definitely not
okay,
Peter.
Well then,
listen to Carolina Run. They have a song because I always think that they're saying my name actually. So
two out of three says Carolina Run. One abstention.
Thank you. And Julie, do they ever say anything else to you? Do they talk to you?
They because say piccolo, piccolo, piccolo.
They talk to Rich very often, but I have a feeling they're giving him tips on the races for the next day. Rich. Yeah. Pick Maid of Hearts in the third.
Yeah, don't bet the horses.
Matthew in Eagle Bridge. Matthew, you're on. It's not a good start, Matthew. And Matthew's gone. All right. Well, that was... He waited a long time, and if you call again... David in Medusa, you're on.
Hi. I have a probably about a half-acre garden. for 20, 30 years. Anyway, for the first time, my son was in there working, and it's organic, and there was a dead bird in there. And I was, and there are no cats or anything here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering, there are a lot of eagles, kestrels, and hawks, but I was just wondering why it was dead.
Well, how big was this bird? What kind do you think it was? And was it capable of flight?
I think it was a sparrow.
Okay. Well, a lot of things could have happened. And do you think it was capable of flight on its own, or was too soon for that, for that bird? Just asking.
Oh, no, it was dead. It was
an adult bird.
But it was an adult.
Okay.
Okay. So yes. The possibilities are an injury of some sort that it wasn't able to sustain itself, and or perhaps it was captured by some predator, and for some reason the predator dropped it. And the other thing, too, is that, you know, it just might have expired.
Old age.
Oh, yeah.
Right, that's what I thought. It just dropped out of the sky. Nothing was wrong with it. It wasn't eaten.
Well, there are some scary possibilities, but you say it's organic garden, so I will put those aside, and thank you for that. But the other possibilities, when a bird is old and not feeling well, it really does not want to go off flying someplace. They look for a quiet, dark place to try to recuperate, and that may be where they so I'm going to go with a predator that was disturbed suggestion.
Okay. David, thanks a lot for that one. We'll grab one more here before the next break. Julie Hart at Rich Guthrie join us to talk about birds with you. And now let's go to Sean in Adams, Massachusetts. Sean, you're on.
Hey there. Funny enough that you're doing the show today, because I saved a fleshling out of my dog's mouth and two out of a pool today. After a little research, I found out they were house finch fletchings, incapable of flight. I tucked them under a large raspberry bush where they might have some food and shelter. Did I harm them by doing that? Should I have sheltered them better? I just have some questions.
Do you happen to know where the nest is? Usually they do nest near people's houses.
No, so I've had a few house finch nests. The best I can tell, it's been in my garden. I really can't tell. I just kind of found them in the yard.
I would say probably put it up off the ground, like in a shrub or a low branch in a tree, so that it would be harder for a cat to get it, a stray cat. But other than that, I mean, like, you know, the old wives' tale, like that your scent would disturb the parents from going back to the baby or something. That's not really going to be a problem in this case. Probably the bigger problem would be some sort of internal injury from the dog, or just, you know, getting, eaten by a cat or other predator in the area.
The dog didn't really damage the bird at all. Didn't break any wings or anything. It has a very small mouth, small dog. So.
Yeah, okay. The parent birds will look after their young even after they've fallen out of the nest and into hard times. So if it was capable of standing on its own two feet and flapping its wings and making a noise, the parents will relocate it and tend to care for it afterwards. So as Julie says, they won't abandon it because you went to their help. So that's a good thing.
All right, let's take a break here. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart join us. It's Birds Today and Birding on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551, the number, and we'll check the email bag in a moment. Vox Pop on WAMC, Birding Today with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart, 800-348-2551, the number. Let's hit the email bag. We have several, and then we'll get back to the phones for the home stretch here. This is from Eric in Ulster County. In my backyard, I saw a crow swoop down and kill a small bird and proceed to feed on it. Is this normal behavior for crows?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, they're opportunists, and not limited to crows. Other birds will do the same thing. I mean, if it looks like food, they live it a try.
All right, the subject heading on this is Brown Thrasher 2. Oh, this is from Sherry. Follow-up. Mm. It was a medium-sized bird with a longish, slender tail. Remember, Julie, okay. You were asking about that. Red-brown back, white breast. It flicked around.
Flicked around. In shrubbery, probably, too, if it was a thrasher. It would have been in dense shrubs. So, yeah, it's very possible.
Brown thrashers are kind of like neat birds. They're the freckle-faced cousin to the catbird and the mockingbird.
So. Yeah, the bigger cousin. They're a little bit bigger, too, than them. So, yeah.
All right, this one's from Joanne in Shushan. Just want to remind people, chemicals can kill birds. We had a bluebird pair that graced us for 3 seasons for 12 to 14 babies each year. Our pair of bluebirds died last year. The day after the chemical company came and sprayed the lawns. The male disappeared, then the female showed neurological problems, picking up worms and flying, and then we were not seen again. We gave their 5 babies to a rehabber. Question for you guys. I have a new pair of bluebirds this spring, but they both looked like very dull females. There was very dull blue on male back. Both had very dull, faint rust on throats. As season progressed, the male bluebird seemed bluer. Is it possible these were very young breeders?
No, very young is relative, but if they were breeding, then they are not very young. That's interesting. I saw a paper a long time ago about dull color on adult male birds brought about by chemical interactions. And this was specifically about tree swallows with brownish backs, which is sort of indicative of a young bird. So there may be some inhibitors in there in those chemicals, and I would urge taking this opportunity to please, please, please cut back on the chemicals. The chemicals are what's bringing the doom to so many of our birds. It's a silent doom, but there's where the insects were, and the birds are suffering as a result. So, and good for you for your observation and care. So I would urge you to continue with that, and again, the chemical companies, there are alternatives.
All right, now we have a couple of more emails. One of them, the guy decided to just call in, so we'll go to him in a moment in Saratoga. But this email from James, who lives in Vermont, and James writes, the state DEP asks on their website to not put out feeders due to avian flu, and yet I'm hearing on your show that your guests and other listeners have feeders. Please explain if it's safe and recommended.
Well, it's. I will go by the guidance from others, and specifically Cornell University and some of the other agencies in other states. The avian flu is not affecting songbirds to any extent, as far as we know, and that has been demonstrated in place after place. So, before they understood the nature of this malady, the word went out: stop feeding birds.
Yeah,
which are just precautionary. But now it's been revised, and many states, such as Tennessee, West Virginia, and others, are saying, okay, you can go ahead and feed the birds. Cornell University Lab of Ornithology is echoing the same sort of thought. So perhaps the news from your agency is old, not revised, and perhaps they're being overly cautious and not wanting to step onto the thin ice and go out there.
All right, I tell you what, Rich, I forgot to do your list, and I know it's fairly brief. Anything you want to talk about event-wise coming up before we hit the phones and go to Saratoga?
Mostly things are quiet right now, but I will say that the migration has begun, the fall migration. I've been seeing some of the very first fall migrants from my very yard. Yellow warbler comes to mind. I will say, this is something I was inspired by one of the earlier programs on WAMC this morning. And this, I'm going to call for a recent retirement bird walk. That's for folks out there who are recently retired and restless and want to get out there and try something different and new. Come and meet me at the Hanacori Preserve Thursday morning. if you want more information about, really, 9 o'clock, you know, you're retired. You don't have to get up that early anymore.
So wait, you heard this on, so somebody on, so who retired? I thought I was going to be the first.
No, the president, we'll wait for you.
Oh, yeah, it'll be a while, unfortunately.
Anyway, there was a program about a guy who just recently retired and was looking for some activity. And so here we go. If you want to try it out, I'll bring binoculars for you. We'll go to Hanacroy Preserve at 9 o'clock. You don't have to get up early.
How did I not hear this show? I don't know what you're talking about. You sure it was us?
Yeah, it was right there. And yeah.
All right.
So 9 o'clock, Hanacroy Preserve. Email me if you want more specifics about that, richardpguthrie@gmail.com.
Yeah.
And come on down.
All right. Let's go ahead, Julie.
I just want to say, you know, Rich says that there's not much going on, but there's not much going on in terms of events. A lot of the bird clubs tend to take a break during the summer. However, right now is actually peak time for the Atlas, for the Breeding Bird Atlas. So right now is when all the birds have their babies, their fledglings. They're super busy feeding their young, and the fledglings are really loud and begging and, you know, like flicking their wings and trying to get food. And so right now is actually like a really busy time for breeding birds.
Now, do you still require people or for the Breeding Bird Atlas, or are you now, you have your crew and you're just tabulating numbers now?
Oh, no, we're still collecting data. We still, you know, anybody can participate. You don't have to be an expert birder. You just, you know, submit anything you see, even if it's in your backyard.
What if you're wrong, though?
We'll probably have a good idea. If we're way off base, we'll probably know that it's not correct.
All right. And how do people get in touch with you or whoever to get involved?
Yeah, go to ebird.org/AtlasNY.
ebird.org/AtlasNY.
Yeah, and that's our website. That's where you enter data. You can see all the data that other people have submitted, and there's all kinds of information and resources on there as well.
You know.
And we'll be atlasing on Thursday as we're going down through the Hanacroy Preserve.
Oh, that's so nice. All right, let's go now. Eric wrote an email and then decided he'd had enough of the email. Eric in Saratoga, you're on. Eric's gone. All right. Why don't we read Eric's email then? You know what, Eric? I waited all this time. I saw an albino bird while I... Oh, here he comes again. All right. Well, let's not spoil Eric's surprise. Can we get Eric right here? And, you know, Eric got... All right. Hey, Eric, are you there?
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Go on. Yes.
Hi. Yes, I saw an albino bird in my backyard yesterday.
Cool.
And he was about the size of a sparrow, I'd say, and he had a partner with him. I'm calling it him. It might be a she.
All right.
How rare is that?
It is. With millions and millions of birds out there, it happens rarely. It is rare. But you have plenty of opportunities for birds to go that route. And so albino, probably not necessarily albino, but leucistic, and that is a pigmentation shortcoming in their DNA that will produce a white coloration on them. So,
he was perfectly white. I didn't see any color on him at all.
And that happens.
I did get a couple of pictures, but they didn't come out very well.
True albinos are really, really rare, and they're the ones that will have a pink eye and pink beak and pink legs. All the soft part tissues will be pink, whereas a leucistic bird can be all white, but will have normal soft part colorations.
Well, if I see him close again, I'll look for that. I got to within maybe 30 feet of him.
Yeah, the true albinos will have vision handicap, and they'll put him at a real disadvantage out there.
You know,
Eric, maybe he wasn't.
Take a picture if you can and send it to richardpguthrie@gmail.com.
More than welcome. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. If he shows up again, I'll take a better picture.
All right, man. Thanks for the call. And now we go to somebody who has been waiting a very long time. Laura in Medusa. Laura, you're on.
Hey there. I'm calling because I'm wondering your opinion about using these apps on phones. For example, I had a bird that I could not see in my Medusa house, and it turned out to be a wood thrush. which I was so excited about when I figured out what it was because it had the most amazing call at 5:30 in the morning. But then using another app, the Bird Finder, I was unable to identify a tern recently, and it said it's not located in your area, and I happen to be at a coastal area in northern Europe. So I'm just wondering what your take is on using them, and do you have ones that you recommend?
Yeah, so I think a lot of those apps aren't quite ready yet to be used in Europe. They've been trained on data that has been collected in the U.S. or North America. The Merlin app is really good. That's from Cornell Lab of Ornithology. Nothing's going to be perfect. It's still going to make mistakes, and you're still going to want to like try to verify things, but the Merlin app can get you really close, or usually it is right as well. And Merlin is starting to be taken to other countries and regions. And I think there's actually like 200 species in Europe or something like that that it does cover. I think that's in my experience, that's the best one that we have for North America.
And I love my Merlin app, yes. Other thing is you just have to be ready to discard the bad guesses. And it has a few, but not that many. And it pushes you in the right direction.
All right.
Well, I hear more birds than I see. They have a large tree canopy around our house, so I cannot find them with binoculars, but I can hear them, and that's what's so exciting to figure out what they are. So I will try Merlin next time. Thank you.
Thanks, Laura. We appreciate the call to Gensvoort. And Penny, you're out. Did I hang up on Penny? Let's try it again. Penny, are you there?
I am.
You're on.
Thank you. Well, I have a bluebird question. I had bluebirds enter our barn house through a hole between two slats, and they must have made a very nice home there. And the babies have fledged, but they still seem to be around feeding on mealworms, which I leave outside the barn on a little railing. And is that normal for the babies to stick around?
Sure. Yeah. Many young birds will hang around the neighborhood, not necessarily returning to the nest, but they will hang around in the area.
Yeah, they seem to be going back into this hole, all of them.
Bluebirds will do that. Bluebirds will return to the hole.
Okay.
But other birds that are out there will range a little further widely. And then when it comes time for migration, it's up and go and gone.
Well, don't they stay around in the winter, the bluebirds?
Well, bluebirds do, yes. Yes.
So if they should have another brood, what do you suppose will happen?
You'll have more bluebirds.
To the babies. Yes, I know, but...
The young ones will go somewhere else to roost. Yeah, they'll find
you
somewhere else
they will?
To roost. Yeah.
Okay. All right, Penny, thank you very much for the call. We got time for a couple more here before we wrap it up. And let's go to Kyle, who is on the Mass Pike. Kyle, you're on.
I am. I'm heading to Logan right now.
Okay.
And I just love your show. I wish it was on 24 hours a day. I'd listen to it.
I'd be tired. Awesome. Okay.
That's right. I have a question about chickadee, the state bird here in Massachusetts, and about its two-note call. And it's the same interval every time, but different birds will actually hit different notes. So you might have a...
Interesting. So was that a perfect fifth, Kyle?
I'm wondering if... I'm a musician. Do they learn this and they stick to the same notes? Or how does that work? Is there any studies on
that? That's really interesting. I love this question.
Well, chickadees are one of my favorite little birds out there. And I've had the same chickadee do that same variation, go from one octave to another in their little, I call it a friendship song. And they will answer you if you imitate it, and they will come to you. They'll come out of the woods and track you down in a happy way. If you're doing that little imitation.
So what is that, a third, Kyle? You said you're a musician. What is that interval?
Sounds like one.
That's interesting. That's...
It does sound like a third, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Okay,
So the same bird can do a different interval. Okay, that's interesting. Thank you.
No, thank you for the call. But you said, Rich, they would do the same interval and then take it up an octave or down an octave.
Well, not being the musician that Kyle is, I'll have to use general terms, and I'll defer to Kyle for his more accurate musical.
This is a good line of inquiry, man.
Serious, and I'm listening. I'm learning.
Okay, fair enough. Let's grab one more at least here, and then we'll wrap it. Kathy and Hurley. Kathy, you're on. Or not. Hey, Kathy is very quiet. You think Zach, the engineer, you think Kathy's actually there? No. All right. Well, Kathy, I'm sorry. Let's go to New Hampshire. Izzy, you're on.
Hi. I had a question about the whippoorwill and how often you usually hear them, because the one that we have, you only hear in the early spring, and then it's nothing until next spring. Is this normal? Are they a pretty reclusive, quiet bird? Or... Is he just moving around?
That happens quite often, and whippoorwills will move through, test the water, and keep moving unless they feel comfortable there. And if they do, you're stuck with them. They'll be there again and again and again and again and again and again all night long. Whippoorwills, once they become established in a happy zone, they will stay put and sing.
It seems to come back every year. I just didn't know why I only hear it in the early spring, and it's kind of quiet after that.
Yeah, he's trying. He's trying. And it didn't work out this time, so we'll move on. But you got to do what? Find a mate.
Oh, okay.
Saying to the little honey, listen, this is a good spot. I like it. And she says, keep moving.
All right. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot. Well, I think that... we'll have to leave it there. Julie Hart, once again, people want to get in touch with you about the Breeding Bird Atlas. How do they do that?
ebird.org/atlasny.
And Rich Guthrie, if people want to email you pictures of birds and talk to you, how do they do that?
My name, Richard P., as in Peter, Guthrie@gmail.com.
Well, this was fun. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Ta-da.
All right. Just take that as a you're welcome. Support comes from Ambrose Electric Standby Power, an electrical contractor providing sales, service, and installation of residential and commercial Generac automatic standby generators, serving the greater Capital District for over 40 years. AmbroseLEC.com. Nine Pin Cider Works, Albany, New York Hard Cider from local apples, now serving local gluten-free pizzas and pretzels, open 7 days, starting at 11 a.m., ninepincider.com. And Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever. agstewardship.org. Once again, thanks to Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie for being with us today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for all the calls. Sorry if we didn't get to yours. These two will be back again next month, and we'll do it all over again. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Amber Sickles, who literally never stops moving, screened the calls today. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow we'll talk physical therapy with Matthew Goodemote. That's tomorrow at 2. We'll see you for that one.